You are listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. I'm Aaron York, and this show first aired on August 8, 2026.
Without this place, I would starve, I would freeze to death, and I would have no social environment or activities around me.
What you heard was the voice of just one of more than 2,300 people experiencing homelessness in Waterloo region. He is one of the hundreds who rely on St. John's Kitchen every day. For 40 years, St. John's Kitchen has provided food and support to people in need in Waterloo region. Now, the kitchen is permanently open around the clock, starting July 27. Joe Mancini is the director and co-founder of the Working Center, which operates St. John's Kitchen. He says the decision came down to two things.
Well, it's kind of a twofold reality. One, you know, you have this high homelessness. It's been growing for the last 7-8 years at a level that's beyond what St. John's Kitchen during the day can handle. But also we did a major renovation. And the opening up of this new space, the big windows, a courtyard right off Victoria Street, means that we learned over this winter that it's very accessible for people to use it 24/7 and continue the operation. Even in 2019, we were feeling the need for St. John's Kitchen to be open longer hours. So we've pretty well adapted to the reality that we can support people 24/7. And this is a big increase. For example, you know, 550 people used the kitchen in the first day, you know, just during the day hours, and then another 100 people were sleeping overnight. So it's really showing that the new facility can really support people in the way that we envisioned when we built the new addition.
St. John's Kitchen is not the only place offering overnight support to people experiencing homelessness in Waterloo region. Cabins on Ardelt, formerly known as Better Tent City, is another. But after the region of Waterloo took over its management, the site stopped allowing visitors, leaving about 40 people without a place to stay there.
The issue of visitors is always a very big issue. One way of thinking about it is, you know, if you had 40 cabins and then you have a community center and you invite in all the visitors, well, you wouldn't do that in an apartment building. You know, there'd be some kind of mechanism so, you know, people can come in and start knocking on doors and try and gang into cabins. It's a very difficult thing. But on the other hand, people need a place to be. People need food. And so Better Tent City was trying to do both of those things. The idea of linking the two is that to say, well, you know, cabins on Ardelt is not open on a regular basis for visitors, but St. John's Kitchen is open and there's food being provided all day long.
The kitchen now operates in two phases. It's open for drop-ins from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., then provides overnight shelter from 9 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. It closes for cleaning and setup between 7:30 and 9. Mancini says the space doesn't change much overnight.
The difference is that we no longer close at 4 o'clock. We're open till 9 o'clock at night. And then at 9 o'clock, we kind of say, okay, there's a bit of a change. We're going to start, you know, you can register for sleeping. And to register for sleeping, you do have to be on the region's HIFAS list, meaning that you're registered in the shelter system as someone who's looking for housing or needs housing. That's kind of that's a big part of the process, and sometimes you have to help a person get registered. And then but it's completely open. I was here at 11 o'clock the other night, and there were 15 people sleeping, and maybe probably 35, 40 people were milling around either outside or in other parts of the building. And, you know, at any one time, there might only be 20 people sleeping. But sometimes there's, like this winter, there could be up to 100 people sleeping all at once. It just, there's a flow. And when I talk about hospitality, we're not trying to create rules around how people sleep. We're trying to be an open resource center, an open center, place of hospitality to give people options to for them to flex what they need. St. John's Kitchen is using these expanded hours to change some of its food habits. And by saying that, we think that we can involve the wider community in some of the food production and serving and do it in a really creative way. So St. John's the Working Center operates a commissary kitchen on Queen Street. And generally, a lot of its meals have been like rice hash, because that was pretty well the limitations of that, of what we could do at that time. But now we're really working on, you know, being able for making muffin mixes that volunteers can be preparing, making porridge early in the morning, making more sandwiches, picking up bread and doing and having sandwiches available, but also then even the meals can be more separated. So there's maybe a meat and there's a bean option and vegetables, kind of breaking that off. And the kitchen volunteers can cook the pasta or cook the rice. And we're kind of excited to see that like over a longer period of the day where, you know, the St. John's Kitchen in 1985, 87, 2000, cooked the meal at 8 o'clock in the morning, served it at 11, and cleaned up at 1 o'clock. And so now the idea is that we're serving a meal all day long in the kitchen. So I think that's the biggest change.
The expanded hours also mean longer days for the staff and volunteers who keep the kitchen running. Tracy McPherson is one of them.
We're day-to-day staff. So for us in the kitchen, we're here to help people meander through a day. We get a lot of new people in. They've never been in. So we show them what the kitchen's about, but also find out their needs. So then we figure out if it's within our own organization or other organizations that we're tied to, they can maybe help that person. We make sure that they get food. We have showers, we have laundry facilities, which are all free of charge. We work on certain systems like sign-up systems and things like that. I would say mostly we're just here to help people get through a day, right? Most folks out here are surviving. When they walk through these doors, we hope that they can, it comes off of their shoulders, even if it's for 10 minutes. Just come in, feel welcomed. We're a family. This is just a big family. It's 300 people that come together every day, and we know them as well as they know us, which is, it's a gift. And I've always said I'm privileged to do this.
While we were recording interviews at St. John's Kitchen, a fight broke out between two people experiencing homelessness. Tracy was the staff member who intervened.
You know, I leave in the morning, and I have a lot of children still living at home. And they'll say, so what do you think your day is going to be like? And I always, you never know. You never, ever, ever know what your day is going to be in here. And you've just experienced something with us, and you saw how quickly it happened and how quickly it ended. And in 10 minutes, it was like that never even occurred. So you come in, we always have a good day. Even when we have a bad day, we always have a good day. For every negative that happens, there's a positive that just totally outshines it. And when you look around and you realize that that person that's just slept for 6 hours because we had a blanket, because they knew that there were people around them, that's all the payment we need. Really, it is. It's just knowing that these people are coming in tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. Because I believe, you know, the biggest misconception is nobody wants to be here. Contrary to what outer society believes, they don't. They want to be here to be here, but not for the reasons that brought them.
Pam Redpet has volunteered at St. John's Kitchen for 5 years. For her, it comes down to one thing.
The people. Everybody needs somebody to care for. I think it could be myself. It could be one of my loved ones. And I would want a place like this with people like this. Because I've worked with their working center for 5 years now. You get to build relationships with people. People will come and, you know, give you a hug or, you know, cry on your shoulder, and it always stays with you.
We also spoke with a man experiencing homelessness who asked us not to use his name.
Ever since I hit the streets, I was over at the old St. John's Kitchen by Water and Duke. It was very helpful. And then they opened a bigger over here by Water, Weber and Victoria. And I find it very helpful. Biggest challenges I face day to day would be everything that St. John's Kitchen provides. If they did not provide that, my challenges would be an obstacle. If you do end up at St. John's Kitchen, you would find yourself in the best place ever. You cannot find better staff. You cannot find better service. You cannot find a cleaner, bigger, air conditioned in the summer, heated in the winter.
He says he is hoping to see more places like St. John's Kitchen.
They are like everything to everybody. Every service you can possibly think of that's provided on the street or in the community is all provided here, subdivided. You can get housing. You can get your ID. You can get your health cards. You can help you get your license. They will help you find a place. They will, anything you need help with, I've never seen anybody walk away, man, and say, man, they can't help me. No, anything anybody needs help with, we'll find at St. John's Kitchen.
But Mancini says providing shelter and food does not solve the underlying causes of homelessness.
Let's say there's three main functions of homelessness, and none of these situations are changing. People's social assistance is less than any rent that people can get. So therefore, if someone is on social assistance and they lose their housing for whatever reason that is working for them, and that could be maybe they leave the family home because there's an issue there, or the place, the landlord, they lose their place. I just talked to someone who's losing their place. And these, because there's old rents that are maybe $700 a person, social assistance works on that. But the landlord's goal is to get to move them out so they can get more money from that, because they could be getting $1,100 a month from that same unit, for example. So the lack of affordable units for people on social assistance will continue to drive homelessness. So that has to be addressed. And that can only be addressed through either higher social assistance rates, rent controls of some kind. But we also, another part of the working center that's really important is that poor work opportunities, a labor market that doesn't give great opportunities means that, again, a large portion of society is not engaged in the labor market. And the labor market is really the only means that someone can get to earn enough money to pay the rents that are available. But if the work opportunities for the bottom 30% of the labor market are so poor, many people kind of fall out of the labor market, and then they're stuck on social assistance, which doesn't provide rents to pay for housing. The drug issue, the synthetic drug issue, is another part of this crisis. And of course, we know that heroin is no longer, you know, coming out of poppies out of a bush in somewhere that's grown. It's now produced with chemicals in farms around our cities. The RCMP busted in Smithville a place where a million hits of fentanyl were being produced. These drugs, which are highly, highly addictive, are being produced, around our cities, and then are being distributed very effectively. And these drugs, this is heroin. Once you become once you become addicted to it, you can't just get off it. You need that hit every 6 hours. And the more you have it, then the more you need it. And of course, this is great for the drug distribution network, but for the individual, you know, they have to find a way to come up with 10 bucks every 6 hours. And so sometimes that's, you know, you see theft, you see all kinds of things because of that reality. But it's really the human being that's been broken. And society needs to have new ways to understand this. Because it did, again, I was there in 1982 and 85, 2001. That reality didn't exist in the way it does now on such a large scale. So somehow, unless an intervention happens, there will continue to be this churning of homelessness.
The region of Waterloo's findings also point to a growing crisis. Chronic homelessness in the region has increased by an average of 28% each year since 2020, according to a 2024 report from the region. Mancini says the people coming to St. John's Kitchen have also changed over the years.
The individuals in 1982 weren't homeless. The individuals in 2001 were not homeless. The individuals in 2011 were not homeless, who were using St. John's Kitchen. If you were to look at pictures of St. John's Kitchen in the 1980s, 1990s, even early 2000s, people were better dressed. People had better access to housing. People were less disheveled. And so you have like a three-pronged crisis that, isn't affecting everyone in Ontario. 2,000 people in Kitchener-Waterloo is still a small percentage. But those 2,000 people are very deeply, deeply affected. And we feel it now in Waterloo Region. And we really have to come up with new strategies to deal with this.
For now, St. John's Kitchen continues to rely on volunteers and donations. You can find more information at theworkingcenter.org. This story featured interviews with director and co-founder of the Working Center, Joe Mancini, St. John's Kitchen day-to-day care staff, Tracy McPherson, St. John's Kitchen volunteer, Pam Redpath, and a man experiencing homelessness who asked not to be named. This is Aaron Yorick for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thank you for tuning in. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, and it's funded by the Community Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived version of this program on radiowaterloo.ca/news. And listen to all LGI content on frequencynews.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.